Hello, here we are with Dave Norville, who is a mechanic who works for Coast Mountain and a member of CAW Local 2200.
Yes.
And we're also here with Larry Stoffman, who is a director of the Labor Environmental Alliance. And my name is Mae Burrows, and I'm the executive director of the Labor Environmental Alliance. And we're here right now to talk about one of the most pervasive carcinogens that's actually in our society. And that is diesel fumes. Dave works at one of the yards where they do the maintenance on the buses, and you've become, as a health and safety activist, a real expert on diesel. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about this diesel that we hear about all the time and that we probably smell all the time.
Well, maybe I'll go back a little bit on our history. We work around the stuff all the time. You become used to it. It's just considered part of the job. But our big change came to us was when the TransLink decided to switch to a number two fuel from a number one, basically because of a cost saving at the time with funding being short. Unfortunately, at the time, they didn't really look at, I don't think it went to the board with very good information. They weren't given everything, I think, that would have made the board make a smart decision. So they went ahead, they switched to a number two, and then unfortunately that was when we started to see a change. We'd been running number one, I guess, for about 10 or 12 years. It had been never too much of a problem. But it was still, you know, you always knew it was there and around. But once we switched, the number of incidences amongst our guys was just too much to ignore. We had problems with people that were asthmatic having to use their puffers. We had you know, people getting sore throats, runny eyes, and headaches. Most of the stuff was short term. If they were removed from the area, you get rid of it, then the symptoms would dissipate. But the problem being that is, if we kept on using the number two, it would have it would tend to sensitize the guys to the point maybe they wouldn't be able to work around it. So at that point, we started trying to convince the company and TransLink to go back to the number one. And in the long run, eventually it did. It only made sense. The change was phenomenal. I mean, the guys breathed easier, pun intended. The yards were so much better.
So just to back up, you talk about number one and number two diesel. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between number one and number two diesel? The price is one difference. What's the difference in price between number one and number two diesel?
Well, the problem with diesel fuel is really there's a wide variety. It's like saying scotch or tea. Diesel fuel can come from 100 different locations in the world, can have different sulfur contents. So you start with a base crude oil that they pull out of the ground. Different locations around the world have different qualities and effects. Once they distill it, basically, which is what they do when they crack it off, they're taking different levels. You're taking different levels. You can only, from a barrel of crude oil, you can only develop so much number one diesel, so much number two, so much gasoline. You can, by changing a little bit, you can get a little more of one or a little more of another, but there's only so much you can get from a specific barrel. So when you get to number one, it's a higher grade fuel. It's a cleaner fuel. It's higher up in the as they distill it off or crack it off, it's higher up. And again, it has less, I don't know what the word would be.
Fewer impurities.
And it's just a cleaner fuel. So as you go down, you're increasing possibly the sulfur content. You might have more. The calorific value goes up lower down than you get in the bigger bunker fuels. So, I mean, once you go from one to two, there's a change. That was the big problem that we had. We've never really been able to pinpoint what it was, but the smell, right away you could smell it. It was different. It just didn't smell the same.
So you probably need to describe, because people wouldn't be able to get a picture of this without sort of really thinking about it, where you actually work. You work at Oak Ridge, don't you?
Yes.
How many buses are in Oak Ridge at a time, and you know, what's the environment like there, and do they have to run the buses in order to do the mechanical work on them?
Well, yeah, anytime you work around diesel fuel or diesel exhaust, the big problem is for people that are doing maintenance on them, people that are working in, say, a loading dock or any area that, and confined spaces such as inside a garage. You know, at Oak Ridge, there's approximately about 160, 175 buses. One of the things that you have unusual with a bus company is the fact that you're going to have them all leaving in a fairly short period of time. Of course, you start your morning shift, so you have to get them all out and they have to all get going. Most other yards, for example, like a works yard or somebody else, may have 30, 40, 50 pieces of equipment, but they're not starting them all up in a fairly short period of time and sending them out. Again, the colder the engines are, then of course they produce more particulate matter and more gases because they're not up at their peak operating temperatures. So the startups in the morning were probably one of the worst times that we had with more, especially in colder weather. Quite often we had to pre-start the buses during the night, or we would start them earlier than the guys to give them a chance to warm up, to heat them for the guys to take out. So the yard would become very, very thick with smoke at that point.
So I know that out in the, you know, the general public, there was a concern about using the number two diesel in the Greater Vancouver regional area for all the buses, but there wasn't a very we weren't able to stop it. I think that the reason that it got changed was because of the health and safety grievances and the whole process that you went through. Could you describe what that process is? Because what that ended up being is adding greatly to sort of the public campaign to get back to number one diesel.
Well,
what did you do?
Well, basically, as a group and as the union, I mean, at first, obviously, I'm, as well as being a mechanic, I'm also a first aid attendant at the location. Of course, we had a lot of guys talking about it. The smells were very pervasive. We could smell it. The guys were having problems with it. But at that point, you really, to talk about it doesn't do anything. At that point, we started having to document it. By documenting it, we saw a first aid attendant, had them write everything down, mention what their symptoms and signs were, had them, you know, explain where they were working, what conditions were like in the shop. Was it a, you know, was it a cold day? Was it windy? Was it, all these things came into effect as the making it more worse. Was it a cold day? Was there very little air movement in the shop or in the yard? Was it, you know, early in the morning? Times that would explain more why it's doing it then. Once the guy started reporting all the problems, of course, obviously the company takes more of an interest. I mean, there is a written record at that point, and you have to obviously deal with it. More than just talking about it amongst the guys doesn't really do you any good. You have to prove that there is a problem. And that was the start of what we did. Other gentlemen were getting to the point that they actually saw their own doctors and started WCB. You know, would have to say that the reason that they were there was because of the fuel and that that was affecting them. And from there, some WCB claims. I believe at the end we ended up with two were accepted at Oak Ridge.
Great. So Union Health and Safety Committee, in this case CAW Local 2200, did the work of a good Union Health and Safety Committee and got people to document the kind of physical problems that they were having. And what that ended up doing is making a real change for the whole city and
yes.
for everybody's there. You know, Larry here has done a lot of that kind of work, and maybe you could comment on how important it is for unions to do things like that, because it changes the health and safety for everybody.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think the whole issue of diesel is a great example in what they did in the yards there, because a lot of things started coming together at the same time. I mean, for years, several decades, there's been concern about diesel fumes, diesel emissions, and their impacts on people's health, both in the workplace and out of the workplace. You've mentioned some of the chronic respiratory problems that people experience, and some of the most vulnerable people in the public experience, children, older people, people with respiratory conditions that are negatively affected by diesel emissions. But more than that, there's a great concern about the carcinogens, the cancer-causing components of the diesel exhaust. And it's well known that there are quite a few. Some of the most potent carcinogens that we know about are a component of diesel exhaust. It first became a real issue in underground mining and the use of diesel underground because it was a confined space, but you have the same thing or a similar kind of concern, you know, in a yard like that where you're starting up that number of engines, and or in a shop where it's even more confined. In Vancouver, there's been some good work done in researching where a lot of the diesel emissions are coming from. In fact, there was a good series in the Vancouver Sun, it was last summer, I think. a series of very good articles, very well researched on the tonnage of diesel emissions, a lot of it from the Vancouver Harbor, from the ships, the shipping traffic. And then that's a jurisdictional issue, you know, federally regulated, so how can the province or the city deal with that? It's something we still have to look at. But I mean, when you look at the GBRD taking a decision, or TransLink taking a decision to go to a lower quality fuel that's going to load the environment with more diesel emissions, more sulfur compounds like sulfur dioxides, which may have been the cause of the respiratory problems your members were experiencing, but more than that, well-known carcinogens. I mean, we have really good and effective anti-smoking regulations and legislation in this province in terms of smoking in public places, relatively good labeling laws saying, you know, what's in cigarette smoke. But big campaigns and government-sponsored campaigns about that. At the same time, we're putting exactly the same carcinogens into the environment in diesel emissions that you find in cigarette smoke. Things like benzoapyrene is one example. And then there are the aldehydes like formaldehyde, which is another carcinogen and well-known and used widely in industry. But these are all emissions and or components of those emissions. And so if you have this public concern, and then finally, I think the tipping point in terms of your situation was you and your coworkers taking that on and saying, look, you know, we have a right to a safer workplace. And whether they knew it or you knew it at the time, there is in fact regulation in this province that should have prohibited from the outset the choice of that fuel when there is a safer mm-hmm. fuel, diesel 1 versus diesel 2. So they really were violating the law right from the beginning. And I think that when you brought that to their attention, because I think we discussed it in a toxins course where you participated, that certainly would have had an impact. So the more we get that kind of activism at the workplace linked to public health issues, because they all are public health issues in the end. I mean, if your members are getting mm-hmm. sick Sorry. And they're going to the hospital, that affects our public health system. It's not simply a workplace problem. And we need to break down those artificial barriers that others often place between, you know, worker health and safety and public health mm-hmm. and safety, the public health system and our concerns about that, and workers' compensation systems. Because there's a lot of offloading from the workers' comp system where people aren't adequately compensated or their injuries or illnesses aren't recognized to the public health system. And I mean, so there's a number of areas where I think we need to work out ways of working together between environmental issues and worker health and safety issues and the whole public agenda around environment.